Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, April 3rd, 2021. Hope you're having a great weekend so far. Happy Passover, happy Easter on Sunday. Glad you are listening where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 on WLIW 88.3 FM. You can hear the show live online at wliw.org/radio. And if you miss it live, every show is archived on my website at annliguori.com. And we distribute it on podcasts, so you can always catch your favorite shows. Well, Masters Week is upon us, my favorite week in sports by far. And first off, this afternoon, Saturday afternoon, the second Augusta National Women's Amateur will take place, the championship round at Augusta National this afternoon, and you can watch it on NBC from noon to 3. You have amateurs from all over the world who were invited, and they played the first two rounds on Wednesday and Thursday at a course called Champions Retreat Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia, and then a cut took place after those first two rounds with the top 30 players advancing to this afternoon's final round at Augusta National. The entire field had the opportunity to play a practice round at Augusta National yesterday on Friday. And boy, what a great opportunity for these top amateur players. I was at the inaugural Augusta National Women's Amateur 2 years ago. Last year's was canceled due to the pandemic. But I will never forget seeing Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Siri Pack, and Lorena Ochoa hit their honoree tee shots very, very early on that Saturday morning at Augusta National. I was right there on that first tee watching this historic moment, and then watched Jennifer Kupcho of Wake Forest win in 2019 at that inaugural. So she was the world's top-ranked amateur at the time, and she played her final six holes in 5 under and even had an eagle on the par 5 13th. So that was such a memorable, such a breakthrough moment for women at Augusta National. And the second is happening this afternoon. So be sure to watch on NBC from noon to 3. And the Masters, wow, you remember Dustin Johnson's victory in the first ever November Masters just, what, 5 months ago? The Masters last year postponed from April to November because of the pandemic, and Dustin Johnson had that 4-shot lead heading into the final round. He birdied the par 4 third hole, but bogeyed the par 3 fourth hole and the par 4 fifth hole. So two, you know, bogeys early in that round, which allowed Sung J.M. to get to within 1 shot of Johnson's lead. But at the par 3 sixth hole, he drained a 7-footer for birdie, DJ. And on the 7th, he made a huge par save with a key up and down from a greenside bunker on that 7th. And meanwhile, the South Korean, bogeyed 2 straight holes. DJ birdied the par 5 eighth. He ended up shooting a 68 in the final round. And his overall score when he won the Masters in November was a record-breaking 20 under par. Just incredible. He beat Cameron Smith of Australia and Sung J.M. of South Korea by 5 shots. So what a masterful performance by Dustin Johnson in November. And of course, he's hoping to repeat this coming week. Some news on DJ. Let's see. He withdrew from this week's Valero Texas Open, choosing instead to spend the week at home in preparation for the Masters. He said he played a practice round at Augusta National about 2 weeks ago, and he talked about the course being in immaculate condition. He said it definitely won't be as soft as it was in November. He said in November, because of the soft conditions, you could be a lot more aggressive with longer clubs because they would stop and then hold the greens. He went on to say he imagines it's going to be pretty firm and fast, especially if they have good weather. Well, I looked at the weather forecast for this week in Augusta, and it looks like it will be nothing but sunshine in the low 80s in the early part of the week for the practice rounds, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then Thursday and Friday for the first two rounds, the weather says that there will be a mix of sun and clouds, and the temperatures will be in the low 80s, certainly hot temperatures all week, will make the conditions firm and fast and very, very tricky. Let's look at DJ's results this year leading up to these Masters. He placed 11th at the Century Tournament of Champions in January. He placed 8th at the Genesis Invitational in February, 54th at the WGC Workday Championship at the Concession, and 48th at the Players' Championship. So not stellar finishes for DJ kind of coming into this week at Augusta National, but obviously, you know, as the defending champion, he has the confidence, you know, he just has this whole new outlook, right? He's won, it was only, 5 months ago. It will be a different story for the defending champion. And, you know, will he repeat as Master Champ? Well, it could happen, but there are so many players capable of winning. And it really gets down to those who minimize their mistakes and handle the speed of the greens the best. It's all about draining putts and putting yourself in good position to do so, and really playing flawless golf for four straight rounds. So, gosh, so many people can win. DJ is very, you know, obviously he's a favorite. He's very capable of repeating and just, you know, playing lights out. Now, Cameron Smith became the first golfer to shoot all four rounds in the 60s when he did that in November. And look for this Aussie to continue his fine play at Augusta National. I mean, he could win it. Lee Westwood, he's had two runner-up finishes in his last three events coming into the Masters, and five top eight finishes at Augusta since 2010. So Lee Westwood could emerge as the Masters winner at the young age of 47. Wouldn't that be a great story? Jordan Spieth, well, back in 2015 when he won the green jacket, he shot that incredible 18 under. He's really played well these last few months with three top five finishes, fourth at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, third at the AT&T Pebble Beach, and fourth at the Phoenix Open. Even though he stumbled at the Players' Championship finishing 48th, boy, wouldn't it be great if Jordan Spieth could win another green jacket and get back to his winning ways. I always root for him. Last year, Bryson DeChambeau was the favorite to win, and he finished tied for 34th. Now, even though he just crushes the ball off the tee, averaging 320 yards off the tee, he's hitting fewer than 60% of fairways. So that makes him scramble and puts him in a very awkward position to score well at Augusta National. So he really has to work on that stat off the tee. Four-time major champion Brooks Koepka, he's recovering from surgery that he had March 16th on his right knee, and recently told ESPN that he's busy as hell trying to recover. So it's questionable whether he will even be playing the Masters this year. And it's just really sad to hear about all these injuries he's suffered in the last couple years. So many that it has caused him to miss three majors in the last 5 years, when really he was on a roll. I mean, he just was winning all these majors and was just primed to continue with the caliber of his game until all these injuries hit. So, you know, the question is, why is he so injury prone? You know, a lot of these players work out too intensely in the gym, lifting weights, etc. You know, a couple of his injuries were sheer accidents, but wow, you know, it's just very unlucky. Rory McIlroy is trying to complete a career Grand Slam. He finished fifth in November's Masters last year. Rory has so much talent. He is so capable of winning the Masters. It's just a matter of Rory McIlroy playing four consistent, incredible rounds of golf. His results this year have been two missed cuts and four top 20 finishes. You know, can he be consistent, really, is the question. Hey, it could be Justin Thomas's time. Justin Thomas is coming off that big win at the Players' Championship. He placed fourth in the Masters in November. He's had consistent top 20 results since those Masters in November. JT is poised to put on a green jacket. There is so much going on. There's so many players capable of winning. That's what makes these major championships so exciting. And boy, what an exciting week it's going to be at the Masters. Augusta National, it's going to shine. All this is going on in golf, including the first major on the women's calendar. The ANA Inspiration is taking place in Rancho Mirage, California. So lots of golf going on, and it's going to be an exciting weekend. This morning, we continue our series on CBD and wellness with Beneficial Blends and Chillaxin CBD CEO, Aaron Meager. And in this segment, we focus on CBD and stress. And Evan Schiller, renowned golf course photographer, joins me. We learn about how he transitioned from being a golf pro, even playing in the 1986 U.S. Open at Shinnecock, to photographing golf courses all over the world, and what goes into the art form of capturing various golf holes at just the precise moment. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune Jewelry, that's D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. PeakVision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Aaron Meager. Aaron is the CEO of Beneficial Blends and Chillaxin CBD. And in this interview, we are going to focus on stress and how CBD can help alleviate stress. And as you know, I'm a brand ambassador for Chillaxin wellness products. And before we get into the discussion about stress, Aaron, can you talk about Beneficial Blends, the parent company of Chillaxin CBD?
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me back, Anne. Beneficial Blends, we're a premier manufacturer of food, beverage, dietary supplements, and cosmetics, and even home goods like aromatherapies. We're based down here in Tampa, Florida, and all of our products are produced to our four diamond approach, where we have beneficial for you products with quality, transparency, and social impact.
We were just talking about Tampa. I was there recently, and oh my gosh, what a fun town. It's rocking. A lot of people, a lot of cool restaurants, and obviously very successful entrepreneurs like yourself, Aaron. What a fun place to be.
Thanks. Yeah, I really love living in Tampa. In Tampa, I think, is actually one of the places that a lot of people are relocating to now that they are work from home and have a little bit more flexibility. They find that the work-life balance here is really great. It's great for raising a family. I have three young kids myself. A lot of career opportunities here as well. And we have all of our major sports, good restaurants, concerts, things like that. It's a wonderful place to live.
And a great place to be the base for Chillaxin CBD. What motivated you to launch Chillaxin CBD?
You know, Chillaxin CBD was born from the fact that you just need to chillax, chill, relax. Everything we usually do in our daily grind is about, you know, gearing up, getting ready, going to work, caffeinating. And then by the end of the day, you're so frazzled, you need to be able to come down off of your busy day or your busy week. And so Chillaxin CBD is all of these products that contain CBD that can help you de-stress and regulate your day throughout the day, not just at the end of your day.
Well, you know, it's no secret that we all have stress in our daily lives, even if you live and work in Tampa, Florida, which seems to be like the fun city, the no stress city. But according to the American Institute of Stress, about 33% of people report feeling extreme stress. 77% of people experience stress that affects their physical health. And 73% of people have stress that impacts their mental health. 48% of people have trouble sleeping because of stress. So, you know, unfortunately for about half of all Americans, levels of stress are getting worse instead of better. The Global Organization for Stress reports that 75% of Americans experienced moderate to high stress levels in the past month. And stress is the number one health concern of high school students. Wow, I know there's a lot of stress for young people as well. And 80% of people feel stress at work. So these are all statistics that I recently
researched, Erin, and you know, they're pretty disturbing to me, but they don't surprise me. Do they surprise you?
No, actually, the thing that surprises me is that 20% of people don't feel stress at work. Like, where are they working? That's amazing.
That's a good point. I know. I mean, but I think everybody has to experience stress at one point. You know, I guess to me, it's just the degree of stress and how they handle it.
It's true. And I heard recently that all of these negative health impacts of stress are going to kill you way faster than the things that you're stressing about. So whether it's the email you're stressing about or your deadlines you're stressing about, you know, you have to think about how this is actually affecting your body day over day and figure out ways to help alleviate that stress.
Well, I recently wrote a blog for chillaxin.com talking about a health issue that I had last fall. I felt was definitely caused by stress, and how the combination of doing yoga and applying chillaxin products, particularly the roll-on and the cream on my shoulders and neck, really helped me during a very, very stressful time. And I'm sure you deal with a lot of stress, Erin, in your day-to-day because you're running this company, you have 3 young kids. Talk about your hectic schedule and I'm sure the stress that comes along with it.
Oh, yeah. I think as moms first, and I know a lot of women can attest to this and dads and men can too, but you know, I'm juggling 3 children at home, my work schedule, this insane drive to try to create this perfection in all areas of my life, which we know is just unachievable, but everyone continues to try to do that. I think social media has really impacted a lot of people. We talked earlier about high school students who have these crazy amounts of stress. People see these perfect lives online and they think that's what it is. And it's just not. There's things that, you know, some days I'm not winning at being a mom and some days I'm not winning at work. And, you know, it's an ebb and flow. And so, you know, the CBD, you know, the smells of it throughout the facility, they help me relax. And I've really been using a lot of the other products too, to help calm me down and understand, you know, everything will be okay.
I love the fact that you can just smell it throughout the office. That must be a tremendous help. But and I'll get to the individual products in a second. But again, the top causes of stress, some of the most frequently cited sources of stress include money, work, the economy, family responsibilities, as you mentioned, relationships, personal health issues, housing costs, job stability, family health problems, personal safety. I mean, bottom line, stress can result from any number of things. And it really comes down to how we as individuals, I guess, deal with it, right?
Yeah, I think you've named every issue we've all encountered at some point in our lives. There's always something we're worried about. And I know I'm a worrier too. So I'm guilty of all of these things.
And I know, you know, when you have a lot of stress, it can affect your entire body and it could be linked to many, you know, co-occurring mental and physical health issues. It's not a good thing. So how do you personally alleviate stress, Erin? You're a mother, you're a working mom, you run your own company. I know there's a lot of pressure in your life.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure. And I think over this last year, it's been a lot easier to think like, oh, I deserve that glass of wine at night. So I think a lot of us have been drinking a lot more, which leads to fogginess. And it's not good for your sleep patterns. You know, you're disrupting your sleep. So for me, I try to eat healthy. I've been trying to swap out my wine for CBD, because then I find at the end of the day, when I need to decompress, I can drink CBD, get the benefit of that, but then I'm not waking up in the middle of the night or the next morning, I'm not feeling achy from, you know, consuming the alcohol. And so that's been a huge shift in my de-stressing life. I've actually heard about humming lately. Have you hummed, Anne?
I humming. Love to hum
loudly
and sing. And so sing. Humming is a good de-stressor. Okay.
Humming is something too. But you know, all of the chillaxin products, the lotions, the aromatherapies, it's really good to be able to, you know, breathe in. Maybe when you're humming, you can be breathing in the the smells of the CBD to help relax you as well.
That's a great point. You know, you can do yoga with the candle, the CBD candle in the room. You know, I just think the combination of exercise with the chillaxin products is very, very effective. So I was wondering if you could just talk about, first of all, how CBD helps alleviate stress.
Absolutely. So there's so many ways. First, you know, the therapeutic benefits, it provides that calming relief that I talked about that some people gain through alcohol. It's the same thing with the CBD. You're more relaxed. It enhances your mood. Everyone knows great mood, positivity is so good for our mental health. The CBD can promote your natural sleep cycles. So we have a lot of people who you get older, you can't sleep as much. It's hard. You need that sleep to, you know, re-energize yourself, and CBD can help with that. And your overall daily wellness routine, we talked about working out a little bit. Another thing I've been doing is after my runs outside, where, you know, it's been 85 degrees here already in Tampa. It's been warm. So I'm mixing CBD with coconut water after my runs. That's been really great for me. So there's lots of things that you can use CBD for your health.
And we've talked about golfers and CBD. I know golfers are avid users of CBD for the very purpose of de-stressing. You know, it's crucial to be calm when you're playing golf. Any slight bit of tension can derail a golfer's game, and especially when you're putting, stress, nerves can really cause you to miss a putt from any length. So can you talk about how chillaxin can help golfers regarding, you know, the de-stress factor?
Yeah, chillaxin CBD is a perfect remedy to help with the back aches and soreness from any of the swinging, using your same muscles repetitively, bending over from putting, all of those things. Again, even though golf isn't a direct contact sport, you're still using your full body, you know, all day long out in the sunshine. So CBD can help alleviate the tension and soreness you experience from playing the game.
And let's remind our audience that chillaxin CBD does not contain THC, so you can't get a buzz and you cannot get high from it.
That's right. And CBD stands for cannabinoid. It's derived from the hemp plant, which is not the marijuana plant. It does not cause a high. And all of our CBD chillaxin products contain non-detectable THC. And we test that out with third parties. And so we have certifications that show that there's zero THC in these products.
Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune Jewelry, that's D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. PeakVision.com.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and I am delighted to say hello to Evan Schiller, who is a golf course photographer extraordinaire. He has photographed over 600 championship golf courses. He's published in countless magazines, books, calendars, producing prints, videos, just gorgeous, gorgeous work, Evan. And I've been a fan of your work for a long time and so glad you can join us right here on Sports Interview.
Thanks, Anne. It's really great to be here.
Now, this is not the line of work that you thought you would do with your life, right?
No, I started off playing golf. You know, I played junior golf, I played amateur golf, played college golf, and I turned professional. I played professional golf, tournament golf. Yeah, I thought that was the route I was going to take. You know, I was going to be a tour player or play golf for a living, which I did for a while. And then I worked at a couple of clubs as an assistant in Westchester Country Club and Quaker Ridge. And it started to move towards golf course photography. You know, I actually took photos while I was playing golf, but that's how it kind of.
Yeah. And when I read in your bio that you were an assistant pro at Westchester Country Club, and that Tom Patry suggested you sell your photography in the pro shop, I took lessons from Tom back in the day. And so you were probably at Westchester Country Club when I was, and you know, he used to play. Alan Brown had his charity golf tournament, celebrity golf tournament there every year. So I used to play Westchester Country Club a lot, and I bet you were there and we just didn't even connect, or maybe we did.
Maybe we did. You probably walked right by me on the range because Tom and I used to give lessons right next to each other.
Wow. So your goal was to become, well, you became a PGA golf pro, right? You played in the US Open.
I did at Shinnecock, actually.
Now, which year? It had been in the 80s?
86.
86, right.
Yeah. Yeah, the year that Ray Floyd won.
And what was that like?
Scary. It was, well, it was, I don't know if it was lucky or serendipity, but I qualified on local courses in Westchester. I think the first qualifying, which was 36 holes, I think was at Knollwood Country Club. And then they had the sectional, which was 36 holes, and it was at Century and Old Oaks. And, you know, I knew both those courses, although they were set up pretty hard. And so I, to my surprise, you know, when I got in and I looked at my score, I said, heck, I think I might be in. So I got in, luckily. And then a friend of mine actually gave me his house to stay at in Hamptons. So nice. I had the house for the whole week. Yeah, it was just down the road. So that was pretty nice. Funny story, I remember going out to the range the first, it was actually, I got there on Sunday before the tournament. I went out to the range and I remember it was a really foggy morning and I was hitting balls. And I sensed this guy who came up behind me, started hitting balls, and I could feel the ground vibrate a little bit when he was hitting balls because he wasn't that fast. I was like, who the heck is that? I was like, and you could hear the sound. It was like this thud. And I was afraid, I was actually afraid to turn around. And I turned around, it was Greg Norman. Sure. Who was hitting balls there in the fog with me. And he remember in 1986, he led every major going into the last round.
Right.
And then out of the fog from the other direction, puts his balls down and starts hitting balls. Right in front of me is Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I wanted to go and crawl under a rock and hide.
I mean, just to play in a U.S. Open and at Shinnecock, obviously you being a golf pro in the New York metropolitan area, Shinnecock was such a storied history. And I mean, what a thrill of a lifetime. I was there covering it way back in the day, and with Raymond Floyd winning. And as you say, hitting balls next to Greg Norman and being, you know, right there with Jack Nicklaus and all the greats. I mean, what an experience, right?
It was, yeah, it was, and you know, my parents came out, my father rented a house or something for, you know, my family and friends. I stayed at this other house and everybody came out, my friends, and I had a very good friend of mine caddy for me. It was fun. You know, you got the courtesy car, the whole deal. It was, it was quite a week.
So that was early in 86, what, June, I guess, in 86, yeah. Right? And then you played in the California Open at PGA West. That would have been before Shinnecock, actually, is that right? When you actually brought your camera along?
It was actually after that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
In fact, it was, I think I saw Tom at the US Open. Actually, sorry. This is an interesting, on Monday of that week, I had a drive back down to Mid Island. I forgot where it was we played, and I had to go qualify for the New York State Open. And I remember having a conversation with the New York Golf, the Met Golf. I said, are you kidding me? Really? I got to go qualify. I'm playing USA. Yep, I got to. So I drove down on Monday, played the qualifying. I actually played with Tom. I think that's how we got connected. Saw him later at the US Open, and he said, you know, I'm going out to play in the California Open in August. You want to go out? I said, yeah. So we played in the California Open in August in the desert. So it was 120 degrees.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And so you brought your camera along and started snapping photos. The desert scenery is very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, actually, I didn't have the camera, and you know, we didn't have cell phones. That was the inspiration. We, after the tournament, somebody suggested that we go down the road to go play this new golf course, this new Pete Dye golf course. It's a stadium course at PGA West. It's just like the sister course of Sawgrass.
Right. Actually.
And, you know, the 17th hole there is an island green, just like it is at Sawgrass. And actually, the last three holes are very similar. You know, 8, 16 is a par 5, 17 is a par 3 with the island green. 18 is almost, not quite a replica, but it's a long par 4 with water running all along the left side. So they said, you should go play this course. So we got up early. I think it was the day after the tournament ended. And because we wanted to play before the heat. And that's when I, you know, on the ninth hole, walking down the ninth hole is, you know, fairly early, you know, this beautiful hole with the backdrop of the there's this lake, and then there's the bunker running the length of the hole, you know, the Pete Dye with the railroad ties. And in the lake, there's this perfect reflection of the mountain. The hole is actually called Reflection. And that's when I said, you know what, I got to start bringing a camera. So yeah, that was the inspiration to start bringing a camera with me to all these trips.
So you definitely have an eye of an artist extraordinaire. I mean, that's something that you can't teach. I know when I go around and play golf, I feel like I could have been a photographer as well, because that's all I want to do is take pictures. And you're always, I play golf or do anything now. It's not just when I play golf. Everything I do now, I my view is a view of a photographer. Mm. It's just a natural thing for me, right? I think I look at the world like a photographer may look at the world. You know, if I see a beautiful angle or the light's perfect, or so I really kind of I think I understand like what you do, but you do it to such an incredible, extraordinary level. You have to know the right angles. Obviously, lighting is everything.
Yes.
And the pictures that you take, you know, are at various times of the day with various types of weather and cloud cover. And talk a little bit about your process, because it just makes or breaks the picture.
It does. Yeah. Well, with every shoot I do, I make it a point to get there. I mean, this is after the shoot has been set up and there's been a contract and all that. So that's the, you know, but I make it a point of scouting every course. So I know what holes I want to shoot, potentially when, what areas, maybe what time. And I think having done this for, you know, 25 years now, you have a sense of what might happen or what might be possible. If that makes sense. Like I'll look at a hole or a scene and say, boy, this might be really great as soon as the sun comes over those trees, or as soon as it comes, or in the afternoon when the sun's over there. So I think over years I've been able to anticipate what might happen. It's not always the case, but that's part of it. The other part is just showing up. I think just being there, just in case, you know, I think of this photo I took at Bandon Dunes a number of years ago, and it was an overcast, kind of a misty, cloudy, foggy, you know, the marine layer, the fog is coming in off the water. It's a little breezy. It's a little, you know, spitting rain. And I'm out there in my rain suit in the cart, and it's kind of cold and damp. And, you know, some people might say, well, what are you doing out here? And my thought was, I'm going to just stay here just in case, you know, supposing the clouds break and the sun comes out and I've got literally 1 minute of sunshine or where the sun will hit this hole. If I'm not there, right, you know, if I'm in the clubhouse waiting for the sun to come out, I'll miss it.
Sure.
Or even with that shot, I happened to take it with a drone. I literally took the drone off. It was, you know, it was kind of a little misty, which I don't like flying in the rain, but it was a little bit, it wasn't bad. So I took it off and I literally hovered the drone in place for, I don't know, 15 minutes. Because I knew if the sun came out, I might miss it if it wasn't in position. And the sun came out for, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds. And I got a few frames and that was it. And it's one of my favorite photos ever. So it's partially, you know, it's the scouting, it's the anticipating, it's from years of experience, just knowing where you want to be, angles, sure. And also experimenting. With
certain- and yeah, as you say, it's experience and instincts. I mean, I'm sure you rely a lot on your natural instincts for just when, you know, the right moment will be to get that magical shot.
Yeah. I even, you know, sometimes after I scout a course, I make myself little notes, you know, okay, I have like, okay, these are the AM shots and these are the PM shots. And okay, these are the AM shots. Then I'm going to do this one first, this one next, this one, you know, that's, it's kind of a semi plan, but it's subject to change because you may have to adjust on the fly because you show up somewhere and it's not exactly what you thought. So you say, okay, well, nope, this is no good. Let's go here. So it's this constant adjusting on the fly. And sure. Yeah, it is a lot of instinct, but that's also based on a lot of experience.
Sure. I mean, I would do television shows promoting golf courses throughout Ireland and Northern Ireland for years. Yep. And this was back in the day when our camera crews had those huge cameras, right? And you couldn't get them wet or the camera would be done. So lucky for us, I mean, if you saw the two or three dozen shows, TV shows we did, you know, on these golf courses, you would think it was sunny there all the time because we literally had to wait, you know, for the good weather, right, to do the shows there. But in your instance, now with the technology, I mean, you can go out with, you know, your smaller cameras and your drones and as you say, you know, be ready for the shot when the rain is gone, right? So talk a little bit about the technology that you use these days to get these incredible images.
Yeah, I've just to your point about I've hunkered down in a lot of bunkers or huts in Ireland when it was, you know, raining sideways and blowing so hard you could barely stand up. And then the next minute it clears and the sun comes out. You know,
that's right. Like,
protect the drone.
Six seasons in a day in Ireland, and that's no exaggeration.
So the equipment and technology, well, there's three things. I have a camera that would call a traditional, it's a medium format camera. It's a Hasselblad. It's called the Hasselblad HD60, sorry. It takes great shots. I mean, puts out these incredible files. So I use that, you know, for shooting stuff on the ground. Usually it's on a tripod on the ground or it's a tripod mounted on the top of a golf cart. So golf cart is part of my technology. And then also I use a drone. The drone is an Inspire 2. It's made by DJI. And one of the things I like about it, it's a larger drone than a lot of people use. You know, some people use a Phantom or they use a Mavic 2 Pro, which are much smaller. But I like this drone for two reasons. One is its size. So in the wind, it's pretty stable. The other reason I like it has two cameras I can use with it and also interchangeable lenses, which the other ones don't have. You know, so I got three or four lenses I can change into, you know, wide angle, zoom, so I can get tighter shots. It puts out incredible files. The video is, you know, is wonderful. I mean, it can shoot up to 6K video with it when on this little drone. I mean, they actually film commercials and movies on this thing now, which is amazing.
So asking you what courses are your favorites to photograph is probably similar to asking you like which child is your favorite, but I'm sure there are some courses that just stand out as far as the dramatic scenery and the lighting goes. If you could answer which golf course, you know, based on maybe scenery and lighting are your favorites to shoot.
Yeah. I love going to Ireland. Well, the scenery is beautiful. The topography, the landscapes are just incredible, as you know. And the light is, I've usually gone in September, which is my favorite month to go there. The sun is a little bit lower than it is at other times of year. And there's just something really magical about the light there, you know, especially because you can get these dramatic weather changes. You know, it could be raining in a moment and then the sun comes out and you get a rainbow, or you get this incredible light, you know, because there's some dark clouds in the distance, or, you know, there's this, you know, after it rains, it's wet, so the ground is kind of like glimmering a little bit. So I would say, you know, almost any place in Ireland. And then places along, like Bandon Dunes.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's along the coast. And again, the weather, you know, you have these, can have these dramatic changes in weather, you know, where the weather, marine layer, the fog will roll in and out. And it, you know, there's like that day at Bandon Dunes, that shot. And there was another day I recall out at Old MacDonald where we were playing and the fog was hovering along the coast, just, I mean, literally right along the coast. And then it would come in like halfway over the golf course and then go back out. And then come back in over the golf course and go out. And we were playing. And I said, boy, if this keeps up, when we go to shoot, it's going to be incredible. And it did. You know, it was just, it would hover along the coast, then it would come in. In fact, there was one point it came in so fast, it engulfed my drone. It was gone. It was like that movie with a fog where the fog would come in and people would disappear.
I lost my drone.
I was like, oh my God, where is it? You know, my wife said, I don't know, it's in the fog. You know, so I pushed, I right away pushed up so it would go up above it. So, I mean, I was literally taking photos from above the fog down through the fog of the golf course.
That's cool.
It was like, you know, it was these little openings in it. I just remember some of these shots I took of the seventh hole at Old MacDonald because it sits up on that, you know, that rid, that mound or the dune right by the water.
Right.
And
Bandon Dunes is like with the six different golf courses there. It's just, with the dramatic coastline, it's just unbelievable. And you mentioned Old MacDonald. I almost had a hole in one on a par four there.
Wow.
And I tapped in for eagle. It was just that's a magical memory for me. So, but all those golf courses are just so unique, you know, and Bandon Trails, that's so different from the other ones too.
Yeah.
Just when you think you've seen the most gorgeous, breathtaking golf hole on the planet, you know, you go to the next course, you know, down the road and it just blows you away. And there's just so many great holes to photograph over there, just all over the world. What a great career, Evan, really. I mean, you have a passion for what you do and you're very good at social media, I must say, because every day are you doing this personally or do you have somebody who's helping with the social media?
I do it.
Very astute at it.
I do it. I like it. I mean, it's somewhat timey, but I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like giving some thought to what I'm going to post, but also what I'm going to write. You know, I like to include some kind of story about the photo or something that might be of interest rather than just popping a photo up there. Because I know when I look at, I see people like a video or I see a photo of another photographer, I enjoy reading the story behind it. It gives it more meaning, you know, and I feel more, you know, connection to that person.
Who are some of these? You mentioned, you know, some of your colleagues in the business. Who are some of the colleagues and your colleagues in golf course photography that you admire or that you follow?
Let's see. There's a Gary Lisbon who lives in Australia. I know they're in lockdown, so he hasn't been able to go much. Kevin Murray, who lives in the UK. Brian Orr, who lives out west. I think he lives in Utah. Yeah, they've always admired their work. And David Cannon, I think, who you know, who's also from the UK. He shoots mostly tournaments. I've always admired what he does at golf tournaments and his golf course photography as well.
Right.
Really nice.
And Joanne Dost.
Yes, sure, and Joanne. I know Joanne, and Joanne's been, God, she's probably been doing it longer than anybody.
And she used to be a professional as well. She played on the LPGA tour.
She did, yes. She did.
I love Joanne's work.
Joanne does some great work. We keep in touch every once in a while. We touch base with one another.
And talk about Augusta National. I mean, how many times have you been able to photograph on Augusta National?
Wow. I want to say, I've been to the Masters, I think, six years in a row. So I shot the tournament. And then I've been there on two other occasions just to shoot the golf course.
And what are your favorite holes there on Augusta?
Wow.
To shoot.
I would have to say probably that area of 12 and 13 is
right.
Yeah.
That's so really, Amen Corner, obviously starting with 11 and 12, the par three, and then 13, the par five. I mean, with all the azaleas in bloom and the dogwoods.
I think
like
the hole that I really, when I first saw it, that I was really impressed with and surprised, impressed and blown away was 10.
Oh yeah.
I remember walking down the hill and looking at it. Oh my God, look at
that. That is some hill, and right? You can't tell how elevated it is, when you're watching it on TV until you walk it. That is some major hill.
And how much bend there is to the dog leg. You don't realize how much downhill. I remember walking down the hill looking, going, oh my God, that is really cool. Yeah, that's a good one. I was there on, it was in 2005, when Tiger chipped in on 16. I was there. I remember there's a spot on the grandstand on 15. It was all the way top right. Now the grandstands, the top row in the grandstands is reserved for media and members. And I remember a couple of days prior to that, I tried to get up there and it was just packed with members. And it's like, I want to get over there. And they're looking at me like, are you out of your mind, buddy? So I made friends with this guy who was a member. And I said, man, I really would love to get up here on Sunday. He goes, you know what? I'm going to come up here. I'm going to sit up here on Sunday. I'm going to save this place for you. So he saved the end for me. So I walked Sunday afternoon, I walked out, he goes, but get here somewhat early before Tiger's group get, because it's just going to be crazy.
Sure.
So I got there like an hour early and just sat there. And, you could just see this throng of people coming as the last groups were coming. And I sat there in that corner and had a perfect view of the whole thing.
Did you photograph the moment?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And my, I don't know if there's a kind of a famous photo where you see, it's Tiger's goal. You can see it through the arms of the people. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't get it. My friend, Steve Zerle, who worked for Golf Digest, he got it. But it's, I actually have it right here hanging on my wall. But yeah, it was, I mean, the grandstands were shaking.
What a great memory. I called that shot. WFAN threw it to me for my update just as Tiger hit that ball.
Yeah.
And so it was like doing play-by-play of that shot with the Nike ball just hanging on the lip of that cup for a few seconds. But when you were shooting it, did you just constant?
I only saw it through my camera.
Yeah. Did you get the whole, like the sequence of the entire shot? Fun.
I did. It was, from where I was without the zoom lens, it was hard to really see the ball, but with my camera and the zoom, I could see everything really clearly.
How fun. And no obstructions, right? Nobody jumped in your view.
Nope.
With
nobody.
Waving their hands. And
there was a tree that was kind of hanging down, but I literally remember looking through my lens and my camera and it was going like this. It was shaking because everybody in the grandstand was just going, and I had this fleeting thought. I said, I hope these grandstands are strong enough
Well, Evan, you're just extraordinary. Thank you so much for joining me. And we could go on and talk. I mean, you have photographed so many golf courses. And which course have you gone back to the most to photograph of all the 600 championship courses that you photographed? Which one have you photographed the most?
Pebble Beach.
Ah.
I go there, well, not this last year because of COVID, but I'm actually heading there next month. I usually go there once or twice a year. They have a handful of licensed photographers. Basically, you have a deal with Pebble Beach.
Sure.
That allows you to go there and photograph the course and then sell the images. And so if you don't have that, you can't do it. You can't just go there and photograph it and sell the images. So I usually make it a point of going once or twice a year. And so I've been there over the last 20 years, a number of times.
So, well, what a great life. What a great career. And to be so passionate about what you do, and why not? I mean, do you play as much as you used to or not?
No, I don't play as much as I used to, but that's okay. I hadn't played in months. I did a shoot in Hawaii a few weeks ago. And so I said, I'm not coming to Hawaii and not playing golf.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, you must have more frequent flyer miles than most journalists that I know, because you travel. You are not home, you know, for that long before you're off to your next golf course. Thank you so much, Evan Schiller, golf course photographer extraordinaire. Hope to get you back on Sports Interview real soon.
Thanks, Anne. It was just really wonderful. It was great. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My thanks to Aaron Meager, to Evan Schiller, and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship, the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals from Augusta on Sunday, the LPGA's ANA Inspiration, and Masters Week. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. It's a bittersweet.